Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, a late amendment to the federal highway funding bill could potentially authorize even heavier trucks on American highways, up to 91,000 pounds or 5 tons more cargo than today's big rigs. It's a provision that's raising concerns about safety as well as the impact on roads and bridges. We'll take a closer look. Also this morning, Senator John Husted will join us with his thoughts on the sudden passing of Senator Lindsey Graham over the weekend. And it's a big day in Fostoria. The Union Pacific's massive big boy steam engine is back for a return visit, and the community is rolling out the welcome mat for those who want to get a once-in-a-lifetime look. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, July 14th, 2026. This is like a story out of a bad sci-fi movie. I mean, this is a plot device in some B-movie, but it is absolutely real. The Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, has approved, they've given their approval for a California startup company called Reflect Orbital. To launch a satellite that uses giant Mylar mirrors to redirect sunlight back to Earth in places that don't have sunlight. the satellite, I'm serious. This is the plan. Reflect Orbital. The satellite will orbit about 400 miles above the Earth and deploy a 60-foot square reflective panel to beam a moving circle of sunlight a little over 3 miles wide onto targeted locations. The company aims to sell sunlight on demand to solar farms, right? Because in order to generate electricity from a solar farm, you need sunlight. So they're going to sell sunlight on demand to these solar farms for post-sunset electricity generation. They also say they could use this. It could be a benefit to agriculture. If crops need some sunlight and they're not getting it naturally, then they can direct the sun over these crops. Okay. Emergency response. Let's say there's a disaster in the middle of the night. They can position the satellite and the Mylar reflective panels to light up the sky so that emergency responders can, do their thing. Military operations could use this. Although I'm thinking a lot of military operations happen under the cover of darkness for a reason. So maybe they wouldn't want sunlight. I don't know. But astronomers warn that the whole idea could severely disrupt ground-based telescopes and increase sky glow, light pollution on Earth. And critics also cite concerns over nocturnal wildlife. I mean, how much would that throw off the wildlife and mess up their natural circadian rhythms and all of that? And human sleep patterns obviously would be disrupted with sunlight on demand. But that's the idea. They want to sell sunlight on demand. I saw that on the Newswire and I thought, that is a crazy, crazy idea. I guess, yeah, I can see some applications where this, would be a good thing, I suppose. But that is just crazy. Right now, they're just going to launch one as kind of a demonstration, a proof of concept. And if it works, they want to deploy more. And heck, we could light up the entire Earth if we get enough of these satellites up there. We'll never have to worry about, not having daylight again. Forget daylight saving time, because you heard that there's this vote. Apparently, Congress is going to vote on allowing states to do daylight saving time year round, so we don't have to switch the clocks anymore. I'll do you one better. Apparently, Reflect Orbital said, "Hold my beer. We're going to do you one better here." I know it's crazy. It's really happening. Today is the final day of the running of the bulls in Pamplona, Spain. So far, the worst injury during this year's edition of the annual ritual appears to be a runner who was gored in the face on Saturday. As six bulls charged through the narrow cobblestone streets, the 2.5 minute, 957 yard run from the pen to the bull ring turned chaotic as animals knocked pedestrians down, knocked the participants down, and stumbling runners caused multiple pileups. A black bull broke from the pack early, slamming one runner full in the face with its horns. 12 others required medical treatment for various injuries, but this was the guy that was gored in the face. Wow. Wow. It says here many runners appeared unaware that the bulls were directly behind them. You're in Pamplona for the week of the running of the bulls. Did you not know that there would be bulls? That line in the story kind of confused me. How could they not know that there were bulls? Hey, what's everyone running for? Did you just wander out in the street? Did you just wake up from Rip Van Winkle kind of sleep and wander out into the street? Hey, what's everyone running for? While gorings and broken bones at the event are common, partly due to large numbers of novice runners and tourists, leave it to the professional runners. Don't go out there unless you know what you're doing. Anyway, large numbers of novice runners and tourists are the bulk of the injury. The last fatality actually occurred in 2009. So it's been a long time since anyone has actually died. But we got some good injuries. The running of the bulls. Today's the final day for that in Spain. This I thought was kind of interesting. And I saw this on the Business Wire. The prediction markets like Kalshi and Polymarket, we are so addicted with gambling that we will gamble on anything in this country, not just in this country, around the world. People just gamble on anything. We'll wager on anything. And proof of that is in these prediction markets like Kalshi and Polymarket. They will literally let you bet on just about anything. Now, Goldman Sachs is placing restriction on what trades their employees can engage in on these prediction markets. According to reports, employees are allowed to bet on sports and entertainment, but are barred from trading on markets, on these prediction markets that are tied to specific companies, financial markets, or election outcomes. The idea is that the investment professionals, Goldman Sachs, have inside information that might make it, if not illegal, at least unethical at a minimum. The updated policy comes as prediction markets have come under heightened scrutiny over insider trading. The House Oversight Committee recently launched a probe into whether users are relying on non-public or classified information to place their wagers. And so this, I bring it up because this is another example of sometimes the technology gets ahead of what we are prepared to deal with. We're not thinking far enough ahead to anticipate all of the issues that come with the idea of these prediction markets, and now we're trying to sort this out. So Goldman Sachs has put this restriction on their employees. Meanwhile, nearly $200 million has been wagered on these prediction markets on the midterm election results. So far, and this is just, we're still months away, $200 million already been wagered on the outcome of the midterms. NBC News analyzed 1,400 open markets on Polymarket and Kalshi, and the most likely outcome in the November midterms. We're putting betting odds on elections now. The most likely outcome, according to those who have placed bets, Democrats taking control of the Senate and the House with a 46% probability as of Sunday evening. That's what they report. That's what people apparently believe who are wagering on this. Polymarket users placed $3.2 billion in bets on the last presidential election. Now, you remember we were talking about this some time ago. A Politico poll conducted back in May found that 44% of Americans believe that betting on election results should be illegal. Should be, but it's not. In many places, you can do this. And $3.2 billion in the last presidential election was wagered on the outcome. And so far, nearly $200 million on the midterms. And we still have many months to go. It's crazy. We will wager on anything. And how about this? This could be this day's news of most lasting significance. Humanoid robots have performed two surgeries for the first time. This is on pigs. They didn't perform human surgery, but they performed surgery on pigs, these humanoid robots, as kind of, again, a proof of concept kind of thing. Researchers say this could be a potential game changer for hospitals in the future. The procedures and the results were published in the journal Nature earlier this month and involved engineers and surgeons from the University of California, San Diego. One surgery was led by a humanoid robot and assisted by a surgeon. The second surgery was completed by two humanoid robots acting entirely on their own. They removed the gallbladders of the patient pigs, and that is, it says, it's a significant step before the experiments progress to human trials. UCSD's Center for the Future of Surgery referred to the procedure as a proof of concept. They envision two significant applications here in places where emergency surgery might have to be performed when no operating room is nearby, such as on a ship or in a rural village somewhere, something like that. They also suggest that the robot could potentially help ease hospital staffing shortages. So, you know, robotic surgery is not new, but these are humanoid robots that are acting alone. They're not being controlled by a human somewhere else, controlled remotely. I don't know. It's amazing technology, and it may be coming soon. Would you? Would you want to be operated on by a robot? I don't know. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchak. Your WTOL 11 weather. Plenty of sunshine expected again today with a high in the 90s. Mostly clear tonight, low in the 70s. The Ohio State Highway Patrol is investigating a crash on Interstate 75 in Findlay. The patrol says a pickup truck pulling a camper lost control at mile marker 156 southbound, overcorrected, and then flipped over. The truck and camper came to rest a little south of the flyover ramp. Despite how bad the crash looked, two people in the truck should be okay. They were taken to BVH to be checked out as a precaution. The camper was completely destroyed in the crash, which happened at about 9:30 Monday morning, and the highway was closed for approximately 3 hours. See some pictures in this story on our website. Thousands of Haitian immigrants in Springfield, Ohio, are breathing a temporary sigh of relief.
Federal officials have extended their work permits just hours before they were set to expire. The permits will now remain valid until July 24th. That last-minute extension follows the Supreme Court ruling on temporary protected status, which clears the way for the Trump administration to end the program. Springfield is currently home to an estimated 15,000 Haitian immigrants.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. The West Ohio Food Bank will be holding a food distribution in Putnam County at the fairgrounds on Wednesday from 2 to 3:30. The food bank points out that only two families per car can be served. Get more details on this food distribution and this story on our website. The Fort Finley FOP Lodge 20 Foundation's next Cops and Cones Night is tomorrow night at the downtown Deitch Brothers location.
It's a different way for our officers to serve, serving up smiles, sprinkles, and plenty of ice cream.
Teresa White, director of the Fort Finley FOP Lodge 20 Foundation, says while kids certainly enjoy the free ice cream, the true purpose of the program is to show kids that the people behind the badge are approachable, caring members of our community. Get more details on Cops and Cones in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news anytime at WFIN.com.
Well, as millions of Ohioans hit the road for their summer vacations, here's something to think about. Congress is weighing a proposal that could put significantly heavier semi-trucks on interstate highways in the future. Among those opposed to this idea are law enforcement, truck drivers, safety groups, and our next guest, Chief Stephen Castevens, retired former president of the International Association of Chiefs of Police. Chief Castevens, what would this mean for the average driver, say, in the state of Ohio?
Well, that's probably the best question. So the bill that's being proposed is called the 10-year pilot project, which is kind of a misnomer. 10 years is not a pilot project. 10 years sounds permanent. But the bill would increase truck weight across our nation from the current 80,000 pounds to 91,000 pounds. So adding 5.5 tons of extra weight to semi-tractor trailers. And so the biggest concern, and there are many, but the biggest concern for motorists should be that a study by the U.S. Department of Transportation found that 91,000-pound trucks have a 47% higher crash rate. They also have concerns because heavier weights means an increased stopping distance. The weights are overtaxing the brake and suspension system of these trucks, and 91,000-pound trucks have a much higher out-of-service rate. So there are a lot of red flags there for motorists.
You also bring up the point that this could have a significant detrimental effect on infrastructure, bridges, roads, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. So CABT, the Coalition Against Bigger Trucks, our study found more than 68,000 local bridges in the U.S. that would not be able to accommodate this extra weight. And the cost to replace or upgrade those bridges is $78 billion. And if you want to take it closer to home to Ohio, you have 26,713 bridges in Ohio. 10,471 of those have already been rated fair to poor condition. That's over 39% of your bridges statewide, and that's Federal Highway Administration data.
Mm-hmm.
And for Ohio, we found that of those bridges, over 2,600 of them would be at risk at this weight, and the cost to your taxpayers, over $3.6 billion.
One thing that is interesting about this debate, as we were kind of alluding to earlier, is that the opposition is coming from law enforcement, from truck drivers themselves, local officials. Raises a couple of questions. First of all, why do you think this has coalesced such broad concern?
Well, I think the case against this increase isn't very complicated. Some of our coalition partners are mayors and managers, our city, county, state engineers, because they see the damage to the infrastructure, their roadways, their bridges. They're going to be paying the cost for this. We have coalition partners from the Truckload Carriers Association who are also concerned, from OIDA, which is the Owner Operators Independent Drivers Association. They're our partners because they know that this is dangerous. They know that since 2010, truck crash fatalities across the country has increased 45%. So the drivers themselves know the danger of the increased weight.
So, and then the second question that all of this raises, as I'm looking at all of this unified opposition, where is the support coming from? I mean, if truck drivers, if law enforcement, if carriers, if highway officials, don't want this. Where is the support coming from? Who benefits from this and how?
Well, it probably wouldn't surprise you that the people who are pushing the bill and who would benefit is a very powerful shippers coalition. These are the huge shippers of food and beverage, like Anheuser-Busch, PepsiCo, Tyson Foods, the very large shipping companies, because they see that for every truck that leaves their docks, they can add another 5.5 ton of their product to every trip. So they're going to obviously make more money. But here's part of the problem with that. And I've been in the business, law enforcement, for 46 years. So I remember when we increased truck weight to 80,000 pounds. And the argument from the big shipping companies at that time was, well, if you let us put more weight on every truck, there'll be fewer trucks on the road, and won't that be a great idea for everybody? The problem with that is the data from the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration shows that every year since then, the number of million miles traveled by trucks has increased every single year. So the argument of we'll have fewer trucks on the road was false then, and it's false now.
Well, to be fair, that may have something to do with the fact that we're just producing more and we're shipping more, consuming more. The economy has grown. Could not it be argued that perhaps it grew at a slower rate than it would have otherwise? And I guess that leads to the question of, doesn't this provide some greater efficiency, especially from what we know in the trucking industry right now? There are not enough drivers to transport all of the materials we need transported right now. Doesn't this address that on some level?
Well, it's part of the argument. And first of all, I would propose there's a pretty efficient way to ship product across our nation by rail. There are plenty of rail companies out there, and most flat cars will hold 3 or 4 semi-tractor trailers as opposed to all of those being on our roadways.
Fair point.
Number two, I've talked with a lot of seasoned professional truck drivers, and I've talked with people from the coalition, the load carriers, and they say, do your research, because the whole issue with the shortage of truck drivers has been debunked so many times. It's not a shortage of drivers that people just can't find truck drivers. It's the drivers don't want to drive based on the rules of payment. Most truck drivers are out there being paid by the mile. And if they're sitting in a dock for 2 or 3 days waiting for the load, they're not getting paid. And so unless they're traveling on the road, putting miles on those trucks and trailers, they're not getting paid.
So you are unswayed by those arguments. Now, the nuts and bolts of this, we talk about this rule, what we're referring to is an amendment. Correct me if I'm wrong. This is an amendment that was added on to the Build America 250 Act, which is a highway and transportation infrastructure funding bill. And as I understand it, this would be voluntary. States would have to basically opt in. It would give them the opportunity, but states would have to opt into this. Is that correct?
That is correct. And what's interesting about that, and again, if it were to pass, what happens to poor truck driver who, so let's say Illinois does not opt in, but right, Indiana does. And so now you have rules in different states.
Right.
And you, the driver with 91,000 pounds who has to stop at the state line.
Right. Right. I guess the reason I bring that up is if folks are as concerned about this as you are asking them to do what? Do we go to the state of Ohio? Do we go to the federal government, to our federal representatives? You are asking them to do what?
Well, first, I would ask them to visit our website for good, solid information, and that's cabt.org, and I will have all the information that we've discussed. And then take that information they're armed with and pick up the phone and call their legislators. Call their congressmen, call your representatives, call your senators, call these people and say, you need to vote no on any increase in truck size and weight, because it's dangerous and we don't want it in our state.
We will leave it there. Again, retired Chief Stephen Castevens, former president of the International Association of Chiefs of Police and a member of the Coalition Against Bigger Trucks. Thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Well, I think we were all shocked and saddened to learn over the weekend of the sudden passing of Senator Lindsey Graham, senator from South Carolina, over the weekend. Joining us this morning with his thoughts on Lindsey Graham's sudden passing, Senator John Husted is with us this morning. I'm not sure that there was anything, I can't imagine anything more shocking when I woke up on Sunday morning to hear that Senator Graham had passed. How much interaction, I know you've not been in Washington, obviously, as long as many others, maybe didn't know Lindsey Graham as well as some did on Capitol Hill, but how much interaction did you have with Senator Graham during your time there in Washington?
Well, thanks, Chris, for having me. Surprisingly, a lot, because when I got to the Senate, Lindsey Graham was one of the first people sort of to welcome me. And I think he's Lindsey Graham is always looking for allies. So immediately he would start talking to me about the Ukraine situation with Russia and wanted me to get on his sanctions bill to sanction Russia and people that would buy Russian oil. And so, you know, I got to know him pretty well in a short period of time. And when I learned about his death on Sunday morning, it was very sad. I was shocked. I was, you know, I'm still kind of adjusting to life without Lindsey as we were here in Washington today. And, you know, I walked on the floor yesterday, made a vote and saw his desk draped with the black cloth with the white flowers, and it's just we're gonna miss him.
Yeah,
we're gonna miss him.
It's kind of interesting. You mention that in the situation in Ukraine. One of the things in hearing a lot of the analysts and politicos talk about his impact had to do with his stance on foreign policy and his unique ability. He certainly had the ear of the president when it came to Ukraine and you know, keeping President Trump on the path of supporting Ukraine in the conflict with Russia. And there have been some folks who have asked the question, who's going to step up and fill that role now? What do you see as the future with respect to that issue that still is very, very important to our Western allies and to the U.S. As well? I mean, what's the future of that with respect to the Senate moving forward?
Well, look, every time the relationship between the United States and Ukraine would kind of get off the rails, Lindsey Graham would interject himself and try to pull it back. He'd talk to the president. He would talk to the Zelensky. He was staunchly anti-Putin. In the sense that he believes Russia is an enemy to the United States. He believes in the idea that America needs to lead. He thought American intervention on behalf of Ukraine could lead to a successful outcome of that war. And he was definitely interjecting himself into that. He was just getting back from Ukraine when he passed away. And so, you know, they had negotiated a deal there. I'm hopeful that in honor of Lindsey's memory and all who cared about him, that we will not let that drop, that we will continue to push forward to try to seek a peaceful outcome there. But there's no doubt that Ukraine is in a much better shape than it was a year ago as it relates to it. And the United States is just President Trump authorized them to produce Patriot missile batteries that will help protect from Russian attacks. So things are going better there, but Lindsey Graham deserves a great deal of credit for why that relationship has improved,
yeah,
and a lot of things are going in the right direction now.
In the broader sense, Lindsey Graham was one who maintained that idea of, I mean, he was very, I don't want to say skeptical of the America First agenda and drawing back from international involvement, but he certainly was among those old guard that saw the value in American leadership in the world at a time when many in the party have started to pull back. Do you see that continuing? Well, who fills that void?
So look, the world is always changing. And Senator Graham, remember, he was in the Air Force for 33 years, mm-hmm. strong supporter of the American military,
right.
and the idea of freedom loving countries being allied for the protection of those freedoms. That's how I would characterize it.
Yeah.
And look, he will be missed. He is. There's a huge void there that cannot be filled immediately. And we will see who will emerge as, you know, some of the other voices and leaders in that sort of ideological look at the world, view mm-hmm. of the world.
Yeah.
But he was. I will tell you, Chris, and your listeners might enjoy this. He was considered in the Senate the Trump whisperer, meaning
yeah.
that he knew how to talk to President Trump to bridge divides. I had the unique opportunity on a couple of occasions to listen in on calls he was having with the president or be involved in text messages that he was sending to the president. And you would see then 24 hours later or less, the president sort of take up that point of view and mm-hmm. then air it to the public. So I witnessed firsthand how influential Lindsey Graham was with the president, because the president trusted him. The president liked him. And he knew that Lindsey's motives were at heart and in the best interest of America.
And that's really saying something, because, you know, the president has a history of falling out with close advisors, at a moment's notice. I mean, you know, it's tough to be to have his ear and have his trust almost unquestionably, and it seemed as though that was something that Lindsey Graham was able to manage. There won't be any lengthy vacancy in his seat. It's kind of a seamless transition. Already, his sister has been named to fill his seat. You don't anticipate that this is going to really impact anything legislatively. We talk about the Save America Act or any other legislative matters of the Senate. This really should not have any bearing on that.
No, Lindsey Graham's sister is going to take his spot. Will be sworn in today, I believe, at 2:30 in the afternoon, and I fully believe that, you know, what you'll see her is just somebody trying to finish out the remainder of his term, which mm-hmm. is, you know, around 200 days or so or less,
right.
Actually less than that now. And she will try to honor her brother's legacy, and so you won't see any dramatic changes in terms of votes and things like that. But I wouldn't expect. But the hole that he leaves by being, yeah. you know, the chairman of the budget committee that led through the Working Family Tax Cut Plan and all those things, I think that will not be filled by his wonderful sister, who I had a chance to meet just a few weeks ago, Darlene Graham Nardone, and she. She'll do a fine job in filling in, but then South Carolina will have their own primary for who will be running for
right.
that seat to take the job next year when this new Senate is sworn in.
It's one more interesting storyline developing for the upcoming midterms. To be sure. Before we let you go, I do want to ask a question about a different matter entirely. Some folks may have heard this. CNBC recently ranked Ohio as the number one state to do business. And I know, obviously, with the number of years that you spent as lieutenant governor, this was a point of pride for you to see Ohio reach this ranking, which is quite an elevation from not all that many years ago.
Yeah, when they started the rankings, Ohio was the 34th best state to do business, which is, you know, it was very low. And, and that's why our economy was dying in the 90s and in the early 2000s. But many of us, and I've been involved in a lot of this, doing tax reform, tort reform, workers' comp reform, investing in infrastructure, reducing regulations, improving our career centers and our workforce development programs. All of those things over time helped us climb this mountain from 34th to first. And from this is important for several reasons. One, reputationally, when you're at the top of the list of the best states to do business by CNBC, that means that every company in the world that's looking to expand in the United States will have Ohio on its list to at least look at. And when they want to create jobs and make investments, so that's a good thing. And then the other thing that mattered to me, because when I was growing up, the factory my dad worked at closed. My family had to leave Ohio. I never wanted that to happen to other families. If our children can choose to leave Ohio if they want, but I never wanted them to have to do that have to look for, because there were no jobs in Ohio. And now we have the most jobs in Ohio history. We have one of the lowest unemployment rates in Ohio history. We just have to keep making sure that we're helping people get the right kinds of skills, that we continue this. And you will see wages continue to grow as a result of that. And all of that is great for Ohio and Ohio families. And yes, you know what? I did celebrate that because it's something I've worked on my entire life when I started out in economic development, trying to get Ohio, help Ohio climb that mountain. And it was glad to see us get there. And now it's our job to keep it there and to keep growing and keep creating a great place to work, live, and raise a family.
We will leave it there. Again, Senator John Husted with us this morning. Senator, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Great to be with you.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Hopes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
Our broken news this morning begins in Palm Harbor, Florida, where a 51-year-old woman is facing felony charges after allegedly sending threatening text messages to a number of her ex-boyfriends. Tammy Baldino reportedly texted one male acquaintance, "I will kill you," and then, "I have a gun and a bullet with your name on it." Nice! I can't imagine why that relationship didn't work out. She sounds like such a stable person. She also allegedly warned another former boyfriend, "I have friends who will end your existence, and I know who you are, and I will take a shotgun to your face." Again, hard to believe that relationship didn't work out. When confronted, obviously the ex-boyfriends turned her in, and you can't do that. You can't just text death threats to ex-boyfriends like that. When she was confronted, Ms. Baldino reportedly told police, quote, that's just what girls do. That's just what girls do. Well, no, not really. Ms. Baldino quickly found out what cops do when she was booked into the Pinellas County Jail. Oh, and her bond on a prior DUI and drug possession case was also revoked. Alrighty. Elsewhere in the broken news this morning, we've had a number of stories of late of people impersonating cops. I think we've had a couple, three of these. And here's a rather unique twist on that story. In Massachusetts, a 63-year-old man is accused of impersonating a police officer and ordering people to leave Lake Mascoupic. Lake Mascoupic, do I have that right? In Massachusetts, Tynesboro? Anyway, officers reported to reports of a man operating a fake police boat with its lights on. The caller told police that the guy was ordering people to leave the lake, citing local boating laws. the real cops ordered him off the lake and issued a court summons. Impersonating an officer is never a good idea, but, I mean, at least kudos for adding a unique spin on it. It's not like he was pulling people over on the road or anything like that. He went to the lake on a police boat. Doesn't make it any less illegal, though. And finally, in the broken news this morning, managers of a Los Angeles area grocery store are being criticized for remaining open for hours after a customer died in the bakery aisle last month. The supervisor of the store said that corporate managers instructed the staff to barricade the body using shopping carts while the store continued operating and other people just went about their shopping. They just couldn't block off the body with shopping carts. All of this happened after employees performed CPR and tried to resuscitate the customer before the individual was pronounced deceased. The customer's family had to wait for hours inside the store until a medical examiner arrived while everybody else is going about their business. They barricaded the body with shopping carts. Local union president Kathy Finn said she contacted Albertson's Labor Relations Department but received no response regarding the proper protocols for when someone dies in the store. You might want to figure out what would be the proper protocol for an incident like that. I'm guessing it's not blocking the body off with shopping carts and letting everybody else go about their business. That's kind of crazy. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
It's a busy intersection in your neighborhood. Drivers, cyclists, and pedestrians all moving with their own destinations in mind. Think of the roadway like an ecosystem. Every move affects someone else. And whether you're behind the wheel, on two wheels, or on foot, the road is full of signs, signals, and people telling you what's ahead. When we anticipate what's happening around us, when we're predictable, when we share the space, everything is safer. There's space for all of us. Breathe the road, Ohio. Brought to you by the Ohio Department of Transportation.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. The World Cup is drawing to a close. There are only, the semifinals, and then there'll be a third place game, and then the final this coming Sunday. So into the final days of the World Cup. And it really has captured our attention being in the U.S. this year. In a new survey of 2,000 Americans, one quarter, actually a little over a quarter of working soccer fans with actual jobs, 26% admit that they have skipped work at least once to watch games during the World Cup. 26% have skipped work. 14% actually say that the tournament has taken total priority during work hours. I don't want to tell that to the boss, but that's now it's interesting because the interest has built as the tournament we got deeper into the tournament. In the earliest games, 52% say that they were initially uninterested. So more than half. But the deeper we go, the more does it, and younger generations show stronger engagement. Only 36% of Gen Zers have opted out completely from watching the World Cup. 64% of baby boomers say they haven't watched. But all of this sudden soccer obsession, this fandom, I think has many fans, American fans, overstating their soccer ability, maybe in their fandom. In the same survey, 28% of Americans believe that they could convert a penalty kick against a professional World Cup goalkeeper. 28% think that they could do that. Confidence highest among younger generations. 43% of Gen Zers say that they would be capable of converting a PK against a World Cup goalkeeper compared to just 12% of baby boomers. Here's, I hate to burst your bubble, but no, you couldn't. No, you could not. We're talking the best of the best in the world. No, you really, really couldn't. Love the confidence, but no. Well, it is a big day in Fostoria because the big boy is back in town. If you missed the chance last month to see the huge Union Pacific steam engine known as Big Boy, you do not want to miss it this time around. Marissa Stevens is back with us once again, Director of Tourism and Marketing for the Collaborative of Seneca County. And first off, how cool was it last month to see all of the people who came out for a quick look at this massive train? I mean, just watching the videos, every intersection, every crossing, every field, every backyard, it seems like there were hundreds of people gathered. The big boy itself was amazing to see, but no less amazing were the crowds.
Yeah, absolutely. So first, thanks so much for having me again. The June 6th visit was an incredible turnout. There were thousands of people. I think something really special about the whole Big Boy Coast to Coast tour is this sense of community of people coming together, wanting to see something. And that was only a 15-minute stop. So the fact that this is going to be on view all day for the public and all the other activities surrounding it, I think we're in for a larger crowd.
Now it's back. Probably not going to get the chance to see again. So the public viewing begins here shortly at the Norfolk Southern Fostoria Automotive Distribution Center. For those who aren't aware, let's start there. Where is that and how do you get there?
Yep. So that is right on the outskirts of Fostoria. So the address is, everything you need to know is linked on bigboyfostoria.com.
Okay.
So it's off of Township Road 47. And so when I say it's on the outskirts of town, it means that it's kind of separated from the main city, which is nice because they have parking on site there. It is first come, first serve. They're trying to rotate cars in as quickly as possible, but that will be on view from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And so you must enter and exit the facility in a vehicle. Once you park inside, you can get out and get up and see the big boy. They also have one of their cars open with history about Norfolk Southern and Union Pacific that you can go check out as well.
Yeah, because this is an active rail facility. So there are a number of safety precautions in place. As you were mentioning, chief among them is that you do need to drive in. You can't just walk in or ride a bicycle or something like that.
Correct. Yes. And that's really just for people's safety. You obviously don't want someone on foot to be mixed in with vehicles coming off of a highway. So definitely carpool together if you can, and make sure that you can get in and see it.
And then, as you mentioned, the hours for public viewing are from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. So you'll need to get there before 3, obviously.
Yes. And the Norfolk Southern folks are going to be monitoring the traffic flow. If the line is so long, they'll eventually cut it off to say, okay, these people will be able to get in.
Yeah.
And so we're grateful for their partnership and taking care of everything taking place at the distribution center.
And then, as you were kind of alluding to, you are encouraging visitors to stick around for a while and explore Fostoria, especially downtown and at the Iron Triangle Park. So talk a little bit about all the other things that are going on in conjunction with this visit.
Absolutely. So really, we've been pushing this experience, the legend that is the big boy, and then experience Fostoria. This is a unique opportunity, not only for everyone to see the big boy, but then also really to explore the great community that Fostoria has to offer. So in downtown from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. will be family-friendly activities. Ton of the businesses are open for shopping, dining. They have special big boy merch. They have special hours. So please make sure to go out and support them. We'll also have a mini train ride, bounce houses, crafts, all of the family-friendly activities you can think of. And then at the Iron Triangle, will be vendors with different merch, food trucks, and then just normal Iron Triangle viewing.
Yep.
And then at 3:30 p.m. we'll start check-in as we attempt to break an unofficial world record for the largest human-made train shape.
It's going to be a day of fun. It all begins with the big boy viewing, and I guess that's also important. That's really where you encourage people to start by going there.
Yes.
And then for everything else, you have shuttle service from downtown, yep, to the Iron Triangle and all of that, but not to the viewing site.
Correct, yeah. So there's no shuttle service to the viewing site, but there are shuttles from that will go in a loop from different parking areas to downtown in the rail park. So okay, encouraging people to go to the viewing center first, exit in your vehicle, go park, hop on a shuttle, and then go explore everything else. And even if you aren't part of the unofficial world record, we have almost 1,000 people signed up. So I think it's going to be a sight to see for everyone.
That is going to be fun. And as you mentioned, you've got a website where folks get all of the information they need before they head over, and give us the web address again for that.
Yes, everything you should need is at bigboyfostoria.com.
All right. Again, Marissa Stevens is Director of Tourism and Marketing for the Collaborative of Seneca County. Big day in Fostoria with the return visit of the big boy from the Union Pacific Railroad. May never get a chance like this again. Marissa, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. And that, of course, is goodmornings.net. Plus, if you're a regular listener to the podcast, we would appreciate it if you would take a moment or two to leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform as well. That will help others discover the show too, and we thank you very much. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.